This is Amateur Logic, episode 215, for March 13th, 2026. Amateur Logic is brought to you by ICOM. Whether the bands are calm, crowded, or somewhere in between, when the gear stays out of your way and the contacts keep coming, you know you're in good company. Choose ICOM. Greetings and welcome to another Friday the 13th episode of Amateur Logic. I'm George.
I'm Emil.
Tony.
Y'all doubled. Tony. Y'all tripled.
That's Mike.
And I'm Mike.
And who are
and
you?
I'm Emil.
Emil. Okay. I can't even point at you from this vantage point. Tommy's not with us tonight. He is a European traveler. He has been in Great Britain, and I think he's in France currently, but he should be back home next week. So that's a long spring break. March the 13th, a Friday. It's my birthday this year on Friday the 13th.
Happy birthday, George.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Mike, you might want to keep an eye on that guy over your shoulder there. I wouldn't trust him.
Him?
Yeah. Him.
Kind of looks like Tommy.
A couple of good friends of the show and good personal friends have become silent keys in recent weeks. First up, and you guys in the chat room will know, remember Nigel, KG0PL or M0MEJ. He became a silent key couple of weeks ago. We'll certainly miss KG0PL. And also, I don't think he was ever in the chat room, but we had a friend who was in some of the early episodes of Amateur Logic at the Ham Fest, and in particular at the first field day that we did in the woods. And that was Bill, N5YCK. Wild Bill, that he moved away from here about 6 years ago to Missouri. Well, I got a call from his wife just today, and Bill became a silent key as well. They'll certainly be missed. 7-3.
Peace.
So let's get on into it. Mike, what has been going on up there?
Just when you think winter's over, even though the groundhog saw didn't see a shadow, or how does that work now? Anyway, it was only supposed to be, winter was supposed to be short and over with. It snowed most of the day today, just lately, but it's nevertheless, it snowed.
It pollens down here. Everything is not white, it's yellow. Right, Emil?
Yeah, the pollening, as we call it, the pollening. It is brutal on your sinuses, and I can tell you that the weather that's about to change from just about perfect to cold again down to freezing down here and up by you, that's going to get a lot of people sick probably with the pollening.
Yeah, you're right about that. It's I've had the Flonase out this week, man. It's been something. Just clouds of it, but we got a good rain, washed it off just in time for the next morning it to start all over again. So that's just the way it is this time of year, but it's going to actually get pretty cold here in the next few days, I think. I can't ask Tommy what he's up to, but we know he's probably, excuse me. I did send him a message earlier and ask him to watch out for the snails on his food.
Waiter! There are snails on her plate.
So, first up tonight, I had a little project that I did this week that, I don't know, maybe you'll find it interesting. You've seen this particular piece of wire before, back in, I think it was episode, I better not say, but if you search for quarter wave stub on the wiki, you could find the previous episode. You might want to, because the stub has gone through a transition. I transitioned to stub.
Oh, boy. Are we going to get to see the Rheingold?
We will. This is a 1/4 wavelength tuning stub that's open on the end, tuned for 101.7 megahertz. We were using that to block this frequency at a repeater site, hoping to keep the FM transmitter out of the repeater's input. Unfortunately, the two antennas were just too close together, so it didn't end up being a successful project. Even though we got a lot of attenuation at that frequency with this stub, it still wasn't quite enough. But now I'm going to repurpose it. You can see it's just a 1/4 wavelength of RG213. In particular, it's DX Engineering's DXE213U. The velocity factor is 66%, which is important when you're creating a tuning stub, or really for RF in general. It's just a 1/4 wavelength piece of transmission line hooked to a T. This Rheingold spectrum analyzer has a tracking generator built in, and right here is the output of the tracking generator. I've got it set to feed 101.7 megahertz. That's coming out of the RF output. That goes into one side of the T. The other side of the T is going into the spectrum analyzer input. And these two track each other. As we tune the tracking generator, it's also tuning the spectrum analyzer to be on the same frequency. So we can see right here, clearly there's about minus 20 dB as a baseline up here. When the end of the stub is open, then you're going to create a notch filter. So roughly just over 30 dB of attenuation there. Because now it's at minus 51. Since this is not going to be useful for the purpose I originally intended, we've removed that repeater from the site. And I don't know, we'll look for another site and try to locate it somewhere else. I want to turn this stub into a shorted stub. And I want to change the frequency on it to 107.5. I'm going to put it in an FM transmitter between the driver stage and the grid of the RF final tube. And I'm going to use this to basically just make a bandpass filter where it passes the 107.5 signal from the driver into the grid of the tube. But off to the sides, we want it to block those frequencies. It's going to be a lot broader as a shorted stub when we get through with it, but it should still serve the purpose that I'm looking for, which is basically to protect the driver output from any reflections that might come back off frequency from the final amplifier. So let's see. It's open now. We got a dip at 101.7. I'm going to take a little piece of wire here, and we're going to just try to short it. Now, there we go. It's not on there very good, but this is not how we're going to do it anyway. We're going to solder the shield to the center conductor on the shorted stub. There's our 101.7 where we started. Now, that's in the pass band, and you can see it slopes off on either side of that. So there's really no attenuation here. It's all over on the side. You see marker number 2 there? If we go to it, spin it around to where it's on the dip there, that's at 198.3 megahertz. It's minus 47 dBm, roughly. So that gives you an idea of how much attenuation it's going to have. Not a whole lot, but some. Also, it's going to be a DC short with this short across it here. So if any DC tried to come back in on the driver stage or going from the driver to the final, either way, it's bidirectional, that's going to be attenuated. Of course, DC-wise, it'll be shorter to ground, so it really shouldn't be able to pass anyway. But that's roughly what we're going to get. It's still 101.7 is a resonant here for this length, but it's right the opposite effect. Rather than have a null at the resonant frequency, Now we're passing a resonant frequency, and we've got a dip on either side of it. I'm going to pull off that short, and there we go. There's a dip right there for the open stub. So the first thing we got to do is calculate out how much we want to cut off of this, because it's currently at 101.7, which is a lower frequency. Fortunately, to move it to 107.5, that means all we got to do is cut off some of this, because as the frequency goes up, the wavelength gets shorter. We'll go to the website, arcticpeak.com. And this is not in English, so we're going to need to convert it. I'm using Google Chrome, so I can go over here and do translate. And let's translate this into English. Now we can read it mostly. Let's go to antennas. Scroll down, because I can't give you a link. For some reason, the link won't resolve. So this is the only way I found to get to the site. Look down here, and we've got quarter wave stub. And this tells us a little bit about a quarter wave stub. And here's a calculator that we can use to figure this. So we'll enter a frequency. And I said the frequency I'm interested in is 107.5 megahertz. The velocity factor is 0.66. That was already entered here, so we won't have to change that. Length of a quarter wave stub. Well, let's calculate that. Click here, and it's 0.460 meters. It's going to be 18.11 inches. So I'm going to write that down, 18.11. We'll remove the stub, and we're going to measure all the way from the tip of the connector, since that will be part of the length. You don't just measure here where the connector starts. You measure all the way to the end. There, made me a little mark right there. You can barely see it, but that's 18.25 inches. And we'll cut that. Let's put it back on and see what we've got. Marker number one, move that over and see where that falls. Okay, that moved it to 106.44, so we're getting pretty close to 107.5. So basically, I need to make it just a little bit shorter. So we need to move this thing up about 1 megahertz. It's not going to be much. Since we're going to convert it to a shorted stub, we're going to have a little bit of that braid or the center conductor to overlap with each other so we can solder them together. So what I'm going to do is trim back just a little bit of the jacket here, fold the braid back, and then cut off just a little bit of the center conductor, where hopefully I would have enough braid to reach over and connect those two and solder them together when we get it tuned to 107.5. Fold back the shield, because it's the length of the center here that's going to have the most effect. So let's just cut off that's about an eighth of an inch. Maybe not quite that much. We're almost where we want to be. I'm hesitant to move it too much from here, because if I cut any more off, I'm probably going to go past 107.5. We're practically there. Here, let me just pull a little braid over and short it there. Moving it just a little bit now is not really going to have much effect. We're pretty much centered in the bandpass there. It's not nearly as sharp as it was when this is used as a open stub, which we can go back to that by me disconnecting the shield. But when we pull the shield to it and short it, we've converted it to a bandpass instead of a notch. So I will solder the center conductor to the shield. We'll remeasure it, and I believe we're going to be good at our target frequency of 107.5. I've soldered the shield to the center conductor, and it did not move. It stayed in the same position. So I think we've done it. So now this is a 107.5 shorting stub. It's plenty broad enough to pass what we're looking for, which is the FM broadcast signal, and reject what's off to the sides.
When you were using it as a notch filter,
mm-hmm.
is there a calculation for, obviously that power has to go somewhere that it's attenuating. Is there anything in the formula that tells you what size coax you need for a specific power range?
Not at that particular site. If there is a formula, and I'm sure somebody has one somewhere, but not me. So I'm not sure on that. Where I put this notch filter, or not the notch filter, where I put the shorted stub, just we installed it this week. And if you've got an FM transmitter, it's the same basic transmitters we've seen here recently, the Continentals. It has a YC130 tube in it, which is capable of putting out 35 kW. But it has to be driven with a solid-state driver stage that puts out up to 500 watts. And that goes into the grid of the final tube. And sometimes there can be some issues with spikes or something coming back from that tube that will blow out the amplifiers, the solid state driver there. And so we put the shorted stub in there, hopefully. So if there was something going on in the final, hopefully it wouldn't come back into the driver and blow it out. And there had been some issues with a little too much reflected power between the driver and the grid of the tube that I've been trying to get out ever since I put the most recent tube in there. And that stub actually did help drop that reflected power a little bit. I was hoping maybe it would, and it did. It didn't get it as low as I would like to see it, but I got it out of the critical range. So, extra benefit there. And we didn't blow up any drivers in the tuning process, which is always a good thing.
So, I guess by converting it to a shorted stub, it's now a band pass filter. So
right.
Mm-hmm. Really none of that power is going to be eaten up in the filter itself, as opposed to the notch filter.
Yeah.
When it was an open stub.
Yeah, if there was enough stuff coming out of that driver to be a concern for that piece of RG213.
You got a real problem.
Yeah, it wouldn't be much of that 500 watts that was usable. It would be more right. Spurs and junk out there than, would be tolerable for sure. Email, you had something you were going to share with us here tonight as a post, I think.
Yes, I do. It is from our longtime friend of the show, Brian Betts, W7JET, was making some contacts. And I noticed he posted something about making a contact with the Bove Island De-Expedition 3YOK on FT8 on 160 meters. So I know he's in Arizona, and I did the thinking there, and I was like, okay, hey, Brian, what exactly were you using for an antenna? And he said, oh, it was a very modest antenna, Emil. It's an 8-circle antenna that takes up about 12 acres for 160. So I was, I've been looking at some antennas for myself here. A SkyWave loop, a full loop that I could do 160 as well. And I started talking to Brian, who's definitely in that loop of, you know, being fascinated with the top bands, as they call them. So I found out when talking to him that he takes care of some of the antennas and helps them maintain the antennas at the club NA7TB, which is a top band club of Arizona. And one of their, I'll read it here, one of their antennas is designed by N5IA, who's a Silent Key, designed an 8-circle, full-size, 160-meter, quarter-wave verticals over an extensive radio field, plus 8 bi-directional beverage receive antennas. So, George, I don't know if you could pull up the QRZ or something, but if not, go check out NA7TB. It's pretty cool what they have going on over there. So I'm definitely going to be talking to Brian a little bit. I doubt I'll get anywhere near what they're doing, but the thought is there.
We're going to be back in just a moment. There's a lot more to go yet, but first let's get a message from ICOM.
Stick around any ham radio conversation, and ICOM is bound to come up. The reason is straightforward: solid receivers, clear audio, and a layout that feels natural the second you start operating. These radios are made for real on-the-air time, whether the bands are calm, crowded, or somewhere in between. When the gear stays out of your way and the contacts keep coming, you know you're in good company. Choose ICOM. Remote ready, contest capable, and built for serious signal, step into the future of amateur radio with ICOM's powerhouse trio: the IC7760 HF 50 MHz digital transceiver, the ICPW2 1KW HF 50 MHz linear amplifier, and the all-new RC7760 remote controller. Designed to work in perfect harmony, this system offers full remote operation, high output performance, and seamless integration across the bands. The RC7760 remote control serves as an extra control head, and up to 5 can be registered to the RF deck, though only 1 can be active at a time. For wireless connectivity, simply connect a commercially available Wi-Fi access point via the LAN port. Whether you're working from the shack, the field, or a remote site, you'll experience crystal clear audio, digital precision, and amplifier-grade power, all from a single unified interface. It's the ideal setup for contesters, MCOM operators, and high-demand users who expect more from their gear. Together, they redefine what's possible in amateur radio, setting a new standard for global connectivity and reliability. The IC7300 MK2 builds upon everything operators loved about the original IC7300, elevating it to a sharper, cleaner, and more capable HF experience. Its improved RMDR, lower phase noise, enhanced cooling, and expanded I/O options make it the next level performer for serious operators who want crystal clear reception, rock solid transmit quality, and modern conveniences that fit today's operating styles. Also, check out Sirius Performance for Sirius operators with the IC9700 VHF UHF 1.2 GHz all mode transceiver. For more information about ICOM's great amateur radios, contact icomamerica.com/amateur today.
All right, Emil, what have you been up to? I see that you're actually broadcasting from the new shack tonight.
I am. And yes, I'm in the shack next to my ICOM and the other radios and systems over here, which I'll show y'all a little bit later. In fact, this segment, even though I am the designated slacker, I couldn't help but give some updates because I've been making some progress on my shop, shack, / whatever else it's going to be, equipment, place. So check it out.
Hello, George, Tommy, Mike, Amateur Logic TV viewers. So just a few updates on the fiber here. And that setup, got it into the house with the other feeds coming in, and ran it above ground right in some loom, wiring loom, right up until I am able to bury it or trench it. runs quite a ways here on the ground. It's a good 600 feet away from the house, which is obviously why I wanted to use fiber. 10 gig speeds, uplink back to the house, which has a 1 gig internet symmetrical access. So let's see where it terminates here into the building. For now, I just have it laying up against the building until we get it dug under, trenched, grommeted into the building here. Grommeted coming in through the insulation here and some temporary power until I get that mounted up. Feeding the switch via SFP Plus module for 10 gig access and into some leftover, the excess fiber, a good fiber loop or a service loop, if you will. And then my Wi-Fi connector, which is all managed from Ubiquiti's system. So Wi-Fi 7 3-band AP, our access point. We've got 2.4 gigs, 5 gigs, and 6 gig band, the new 6E. But it's actually Wi-Fi 7 is the standards on the board here. Finally building out the shack rigs and gateways, and finally got the ICOM out of my box, and I'm working on the Astron with some pieces parts I just got in to make that whole again, and eventually that Ameritron will come out of the box eventually. But so getting some things going here. Got the shop bench up just in case I need to fix anything in the antenna board that you've seen in the past. And just like that, a few pieces parts later. Thank goodness Astron still provided pieces parts. We can use it again. I made sure also the voltage was adjusted properly. 13.8, what my meter says. So we'll go with that. Let's get it powered up.
Two meter ring, I just leave it on all day to hear what's on there. I've had two contacts. But the noise, it comes on intermittently, and I mean it.
And just like that, back in business, guys. Shack in the box, back on the table. Woohoo!
You're right, Mike. That antenna board there does look like some kind of torture device or something, doesn't it?
It sure does. I think it's deliberately done that way to make it look more complicated than what it really is.
Don't tell anybody I've invented my own time
actually,
machine.
I'm going to have to listen, and I'm going to have to watch the episode in the segment that you just did, because I could have sworn, instead of saying Astron, you said Ashtron.
Well, luckily it did not turn to Ashtron with me repairing it.
Now, it's funny because that's kind of a derogatory term that we've given to some of their power supplies, because they have some of them have a high failure rate due to a specific way that they mount their the rectifiers. But anyway, I just thought that was funny.
This has been with me for, I don't know, since 2007? It's been with me for a while. This is the first one I ever had, and all that really went wrong was the pot that adjusts the voltage was dirty. When I took it out of the box, it was putting out 2 volts. Oh. I'm like, wait, I don't think so. So I had to clean up that pot, make sure it was at 13.8, and then replace the terminal on the back. The terminal screw stripped out. The piece broke off in there, so I had to rip that out of there and put a new one in. Thank goodness Astron has a parts department.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's the same exact supply I've got in my rack over there, and it's about the same age as well. And I had a capacitor, just a little capacitor. I don't remember what it was, 10 microfarad, one, I don't remember. But it just shut it down, man. It just would not switch. Yeah,
you had your little tester with the leak detection.
My little fish tester, and it checked ESR.
Yeah,
and right. The capacitor, the value measured right on it, so I wasn't finding it with my old Tenma meter. But when I put it on there and saw that ESR, I said, "You know, that's
a good." I broke I broke down and bought a capacitance meter that would measure ESR. And I'll be darned if I only used it once in the 2 years that I've had it. I figured that would be something I would use all the time.
Well, that's on you. You're just not working on enough broke stuff.
I guess.
Yeah, you need to break stuff.
Yeah. Be like emailing me. We got plenty of broke stuff.
Well, when email breaks stuff, usually it has further reaching effects, like taking out the whole neighborhood's power.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What are you talking about, Mike?
Yeah. So the next major outage in South Mississippi is probably sitting in that box over there.
Yeah, you got
it. Amplifier.
I don't know. I still might be in range of the Superdome for the Super Bowl. You never know.
Yeah, true. Yep. Coming up next, although he is not here tonight with us, he'll be back for the next show, Tommy prepared a little segment here that he was getting ready for his trip overseas. And I know he was going to take one of his handy talkies with him that had DR mode on it. So he shared a little of the goodness on how you can save programming up all those repeaters when you travel several thousand miles.
I'm going to take a little step back and go back and cover DR mode on the Icom radios, specifically the ones with D-Star. It's come to my attention that a lot of people aren't really using it like it should be done. In my opinion, it makes things a lot easier. I'm going to be going out of the country to London and then to Paris for a vacation. By the time you see this, I'll probably be on the way back home. But nevertheless, I wanted to set my handy talkie up to use while I'm gone. So I went onto the ARRL site and I looked up what I need to do. I printed out my documents that I need to do and everything for the country that I'm going to. I don't plan on operating in France because I'm going to be there a short time, but I do plan on operating in London. I'm only taking a handy talkie because I'm going to travel kind of light. I'm going to go ahead and update my handy talkie, put the newest repeater list stuff for London area on it, and then I'm going to show you something that I discovered about it and how to use the DR mode for FM and D-Star repeaters. It's not only for D-Star. Let's go ahead and download the repeater list. So I'm going to go over here to the computer to dstarinfo.com. I'm going to go to downloads. Download repeater list for DR mode radios. Okay, so I need coordinates. You used to be able to put in the location, like London, England, or Madison, Mississippi, whatever the case may be, and get the coordinates, but you can't do that anymore. So I did look it up on Google. Here it is. So you want, like I said, you want the decimal version of it, so it's going to be easier to deal with. I'm going to copy that to my clipboard. Let's go back over here. Paste it in. I'll go ahead and get that off. Go over here, paste it in. Hit look up. Okay, it picked it out. I'm going to pick my radio. I've got an ID52A. Empty repeater slots. I'm going to leave about 5 empty, and I'm going to say, let's just go with 50-50 for now, and let's download it. Okay, so I downloaded my file. Let's go ahead and minimize this, and there it is right there. So I'm going to take the card out of my radio. It's powered off. It's on this side. Kind of tight squeeze in there and put the file on the card. So let's put that into the computer. Okay, it downloads it in a CSV and it's a repeater list. So I'm going to name this one London. London, that's close enough. And let's put it over here. Let's eject our card. Be sure to put it in the right orientation. I can never remember which one it is, so your guess is as good as mine. Apparently it goes with the contacts up. If not, you can get it stuck in there and it's real hassle to get it out. So let's turn the radio on. Okay, so let's go to menu, set, all the way down. You should find SD card near the bottom. Let's go ahead and save our settings that we have right now. So I'm going to call this one, I'm just going to create a new file for this one because I've already got one set that I've been playing with. But you can change the name on this if you want to, but I'm just going to take the default one. Yes. That way, after we import our London file, if we want to go back to our original settings that we had before, then you can just go load that file up, no problem. Okay, so that's saved. Let's go back, import, import, repeater list, and there's my London file that I just downloaded. Let's do that. Skip repeater list. I'm not going to keep anything. Import the file, yes. Goes pretty fast. The nice thing about this is you can have, and I've done this when I was traveling a lot for my job, you can have CSV files for the Dallas area, Seattle, wherever you happen to travel to very frequently and do this same routine. Okay, it's completed. Let's reboot the ID52, so power it off. Power back on. And I probably don't have any, I don't have a GPS signal for one thing, but let's go into DR mode. So if we hold down on the rocker switch, whatever band we're in, or whichever side of the radio we're in, will go into DR mode. So let's do this one. Do the from. If we go to near repeater, we've got FM, a list of FM repeaters. So this is nice because when you download those repeaters off of the D-Star Info site, there are GPS coordinates on there where the frequency's been coordinated. And that allows you to search for the nearest ones. So let's go into FM. See what, there's not any on there for us here because I didn't do it for there. So now I'm going to go back and load up the settings that we saved previously that has my local repeaters in there. So let's go to menu again, set, SD card, load setting. If you want to save these settings, you can save them, call it London or whatever, if you change anything. So when you operate in London, you're supposed to use the M stroke for your call sign. So when you go into D-Star settings, you're going to need to go in and change that and add it to there. So let's do that real quick. Menu, set, my station, my call sign, and I'll do this one, my call sign. Let's do quick, edit, and let's find M, stroke, November. Okay, if you make a mistake, hit the clear button right here, which is the VFO, megahertz clear. So let's save it. So when I go to England, this is the one that I'll need to use. So I'm going to go back into my, let's get out of here. Go back to SD card. Save setting. New file. Let's go ahead and clear them all. L. Okay, so let's name it London. Yes. So now I have a settings file saved named London. So I don't have to do that import anymore. I can just switch to that file. And this already got the right call sign set to identify on D-Star. Now when you identify on regular FM repeaters, obviously you need to ID with M stroke in your call sign. In addition, you're going to need to take the CEPT agreement for United Kingdom to be able to operate. If you're in France, you're going to need to do F or franc stroke in your call sign. But like I said, I don't plan on operating there because I'm only going to be there for one day. So, okay, so we did that. So let's do a load. There's the last one we did earlier today. All. No, I'm not going to keep any skips. Yes. So then I can show you a little trick I've discovered when I was traveling recently to Alabama, all the way to the country of Alabama. Okay, reboot again. Okay, so let's go back down to this one, and I'll do Nair repeater, all. It's going to use my last position, which was here. So you can see all the local ones. There's the FM repeaters. These are D-star, there's FM. It's a lot of FMs, Pearl, D-star. Anyway, they all show up there. So what the cool thing is, when you go to those and you go to scan, hold down, you can do near repeater for that. So when you're traveling, let's just do it. Near repeater all. And use the last position because it hasn't got a lock yet. But you can see it scanning the local repeaters. As you do that, when you're traveling, the GPS updates and the repeater scan list updates real time also. So as you move through new areas, you don't have to look for FM or D-star repeaters. That does it for you. So that, to me, that's a pretty amazing feature to be able to do that, because I did it on the way home from Alabama, and I was curious about it. When I was over there, I was scanning, see what I could hear, and I saw that all. And so I went ahead and hit that, and I just left it on running when I went home. And all the way I got through Meridian, all that showed up. Forest, that Pilahatchee repeater over there showed up. So it's a really cool feature. Kind of changes things a lot. So that's one reason why you should be using the list instead of just using memory channels. Now, you can use memory channels if you want to, but you don't have the GPS coordinates in there. And so this makes things a lot simpler, a lot nicer. I hope you found it useful. If you happen to be traveling abroad, check the ARRL website, this link right here, to start looking for information on where you're going and check for CEPT agreements or whatever agreement for the country that you're going to and how to operate there, because this is a great resource. 73,
Tommy.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yep.
That I have not done that yet. I mean, I've downloaded some lists and put into mine, but I have not used it traveling like he did to just automatically load in.
Yeah, I'm curious to know whether or not there's any type of a roaming feature. If you run out of repeater range as you're traveling, it would pick up the next one based on your location.
Well, it knows your location with GPS, yeah. So maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's exactly what they do. That's a modern radio thing. Is both Tommy and I are into scanners too. That same thing is in some of the newer Uniden models, where wherever you go, you set it for a 30-mile range normally, or a 20-mile range. You can limit that to setting, and as you move in and out of these areas, that's what it's listening to. The system's in that area.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I have an important public service announcement here. It could affect all of us, but hopefully it won't. Maybe we'll get through the weekend unscathed. This is Friday the 13th. The Mississippi statewide simulated emergency test will be conducted on Saturday, March 14th, 2026, starting at 7 a.m., Emil. The purpose of the SID is to evaluate the strengths and weaknesses in amateur radio emergency preparedness, as well as to demonstrate amateur radio's capability to our served agencies and the public. This year's SET, or SET, will simulate a catastrophic destruction of communications infrastructure compounded by a biological threat scenario. Disruptive forces simulated during the test include a biological threat. Emergency communication support will be required for public health officials responding to a rapidly spreading novel pathogen that mimics aspects of the undead zombie outbreak. Hardline services like telephone and wireless communication will be disrupted, like cell phones and the internet. Major overloading of federal, state, and local public safety, public service radio communication systems. So amateur radio will show its strengths in helping to solve all those issues there. Remember, this is a simulated emergency test on March 14th, 2026, to test the abilities of amateur radio during an emergency across the state. And they want you to have fun doing it. All messages will be introduced with the phrase, "This is a test. It is not real. This is a drill." So if you hear some strange messages on amateur radio tomorrow, March 14th, remember, it's a simulated emergency test.
Yeah, we don't want it to end up like, what's his name, with War of the Worlds. People tuned in late and didn't realize it was science fiction.
Yep. You've been working on a little project here. This is a recent device you found, and it just keeps getting better, huh?
Yeah, I mean, for the price, you really can't go wrong. It's not top of the line radio equipment by any means, but certainly it's well worth the price, and it's open source, and it's just ripe for hacking.
ATS 20 Plus firmware update. A few months back, I told you about a small radio that I bought, and you can find these radios just about any of the online resellers. They're not very expensive. In fact, I paid only $26 for mine, and for $26, I find it's a pretty decent radio. It's not the best by any means, but it's an SDR, and it's portable because it has a built-in lithium-ion battery and built-in antenna. Well, actually, it's not built-in. It's a BNC connectable antenna on the back, so you can use it on the go. I should point out a couple of differences that this radio's gone through since the original ATS-20. The Plus version actually has a separate connector for downloading data to the processor, and it also adds a USB-C connector for charging lithium-ion battery or powering directly from a power source. They've also added an FM bandpass filter to the Plus version. It's selectable from the rear of the unit via a slide switch. The ATS-20 is an open source project. Here's a look at a bare bones PCB. The original ATS-20 radios used an actual Arduino Nano on board. Opening up my radio revealed that my particular version used an embedded Atmel Mega 328P, which is kind of the equivalent of Arduino Nano, but you can see that everything's surface mount on this board, no through-hole components except for the FM bandpass filter. Should you be unfortunate to brick your ATS-20 Plus during the firmware update process, thankfully there are ISP pads on the board that you can connect an adapter to in order to program the bootloader. There are several versions of replacement firmware for the ATS-20 and the ATS-20 Plus. Before selecting a firmware version, you may want to open up your radio to see what kind of board you've got in it. I settled on the Gashante version 1.18 simply because it was popular and seemed to have the best support. This version improves the quality of the tiny LCD display. As you can see here by this chart, it packs a lot of information on a tiny screen. Mode, the bandwidth filter, frequency indicator, band indicator, step value, frequency units indicator, volume indicator, and battery charge level in percentage. Even more exciting than the display enhancements, this version features a fully reworked interface, fully reworked controls. The BFO is now part of the main frequency and regulated by the frequency step. Long wave band from 153 kHz to 520 kHz. Medium wave band from 520 to 1710 kHz. Short wave band from 1710 to 30 MHz with a lot of subbands. And finally, FM broadcast band from 64 to 108 MHz. RDS for FM radio stations. AM/FM station scan. The addition of a CW mode. The relative signal strength indicator was removed and replaced with an S-meter-like scale. The tuning across frequencies has become as smooth as possible. A lot of steps are available for every mode. Additional settings page, BFO offset calibration, adjustable screen brightness, adjustable CPU frequency for power-saving purposes, and reducing interference. Added mute button and display on-off button. Battery charge status in percentage. And lastly, the change from RSSI to an actual S-meter. In order to read battery voltage, we'll need to create a small voltage divider network and feed it to one of the unused analog-to-digital pins on the ATmega. Houston, we have a problem. It's been reported, and I also discovered this myself, and thankfully I didn't damage my radio by doing it. 5 volts is fed from the mini USB port, and it's combined, as you can tell by the schematic, that it's combined with the 5 volts within the radio itself. So we need to make sure that the 5 volts coming from your mini USB does not connect to the radio. So we need to either modify a cable or we have to modify the circuit itself. We're going to need a couple of files in order to complete this firmware upgrade. And one of them is the hex file, which is the actual firmware file. And we need to go over to the GitHub page, go to Gashante's page, and we'll find the ATS-EX firmware update. In order to flash the new firmware onto our microcontroller, we're going to need to download and install a file called AverDudes. AverDudes is basically AverDude, for those who are familiar with AverDude. It's a graphical user interface version of AverDude. Go ahead and download that file and install it. In the next few slides, I'll show you what you need to set up. Now that you've installed AverDudes, open it up and set the following. Programmer to Arduino, set the MPU to ATmega328P, and the port, depending on what port is active on your computer, you're going to set your COM port there. Also, the baud rate should be 115/200 baud. And the flash file, of course, is going to be the ATX_EX_V1.18X. And you did remember where you saved it, didn't you? It's usually in your downloads file folder. Once everything looks good as far as your settings are concerned, go ahead and press the program button, and it's going to start writing the actual flash that's embedded on the microcontroller. And once it's finished, you'll receive a message that says done. When that's done, then it's time to reboot. But first, there are a few things we need to do. Okay, we're almost there. We need to reset the radio by turning the radio off. Press and hold the encoder knob, which is the tuning knob. Turn the radio on, and you can release the knob after the reset message appears. And what you should see on the first boot is the version number of the firmware, and then the main tuning screen should appear after that. Wow, what a difference. That new screen display is so much better than the original one from the factory, and I can't wait to start using this radio with the other new features that I mentioned previously. Well, that's it. Hopefully you enjoyed this segment. 7-3 for now from VE3MIC. ATS-20 Plus firmware update. A few months back, I told you about a small radio that I bought, and you can find these radios just about any of the online resellers. They're not very expensive. In fact, I paid only $26 for mine, And for $26, I find it's a pretty decent radio. It's not the best by any means, but it's an SDR and it's portable because it has a built-in lithium ion battery and built-in antenna. Well, actually, it's not built-in. It's a BNC connectable antenna on the back, so you can use it on the go. I should point out a couple of differences that this radio's gone through since the original ATS-20. The Plus version actually has a separate connector for downloading data to the processor, and it also adds a USB-C connector for charging lithium-ion battery or powering directly from a power source. They've also added an FM bandpass filter to the Plus version. It's selectable from the rear of the unit via a slide switch. The ATS-20 is an open source project. Here's a look at a bare bones PCB. The original ATS-20 radios used an actual Arduino Nano on board. Opening up my radio revealed that my particular version used an embedded Atmel Mega 328P, which is kind of the equivalent of Arduino Nano, but you can see that everything's surface mount on this board, no through hole components except for the FM bandpass filter. Should you be unfortunate to brick your ATS-20 Plus during the firmware update process, thankfully there are ISP pads on the board that you can connect an adapter to in order to program the bootloader. There are several versions of replacement firmware for the ATS-20 and the ATS-20 Plus. Before selecting a firmware version, you may want to open up your radio to see what kind of board you've got in it. I settled on the Gashante version 1.18 simply because it was popular and seemed to have the best support. This version improves the quality of the tiny LCD display. As you can see here by this chart, it packs a lot of information on a tiny screen. Mode, the bandwidth filter, frequency indicator, band indicator, step value, frequency units indicator, volume indicator, and battery charge level in percentage. Even more exciting than the display enhancements, this version features a fully reworked interface, fully reworked controls. The BFO is now part of the main frequency and regulated by the frequency step. Long wave band from 153 kHz to 520 kHz. Medium wave band from 520 to 1710 kHz. Short wave band from 1710 to 30 MHz with a lot of subbands. And finally, FM broadcast band from 64 to 108 MHz. RDS for FM radio stations. AM/FM station scan. The addition of a CW mode. The relative signal strength indicator was removed and replaced with an S-meter-like scale. The tuning across frequencies has become as smooth as possible. A lot of steps are available for every mode. Additional settings page, BFO offset calibration, adjustable screen brightness, adjustable CPU frequency for power-saving purposes, and reducing interference. Added mute button and display on-off button. Battery charge status in percentage. And lastly, the change from RSSI to an actual S-meter. In order to read battery voltage, we'll need to create a small voltage divider network and feed it to one of the unused analog-to-digital pins on the ATmega. Houston, we have a problem. It's been reported, and I also discovered this myself, and thankfully I didn't damage my radio by doing it. 5 volts is fed from the mini USB port, and it's combined, as you can tell by the schematic, that it's combined with the 5 volts within the radio itself. So we need to make sure that the 5 volts coming from your mini USB does not connect to the radio. So we need to either modify a cable or we have to modify the circuit itself. We're going to need a couple of files in order to complete this firmware upgrade. And one of them is the hex file, which is the actual firmware file. And we need to go over to the GitHub page, go to Gashante's page, and we'll find the ATS-EX firmware update. In order to flash the new firmware onto our microcontroller, we're going to need to download and install a file called AverDudes. AverDudes is basically AverDude, for those who are familiar with AverDude. It's a graphical user interface version of AverDude. Go ahead and download that file and install it. In the next few slides, I'll show you what you need to set up. Now that you've installed AverDudes, open it up and set the following. Programmer to Arduino, set the MPU to ATmega328P, and the port, depending on what port is active on your computer, you're going to set your COM port there. Also, the baud rate should be 115-200 baud. And the flash file, of course, is going to be the ATX_EX_V1.18X. And you did remember where you saved it, didn't you? It's usually in your downloads file folder. Once everything looks good as far as your settings are concerned, go ahead and press the program button, and it's going to start writing the actual flash that's embedded on the microcontroller. And once it's finished, you'll receive a message that says done. When that's done, then it's time to reboot. But first, there are a few things we need to do. Okay, we're almost there. We need to reset the radio by turning the radio off. Press and hold the encoder knob, which is the tuning knob. Turn the radio on, and you can release the knob after the reset message appears. And what you should see on the first boot is the version number of the firmware, and then the main tuning screen should appear after that. Wow, what a difference. That new screen display is so much better than the original one from the factory, and I can't wait to start using this radio with the other new features that I mentioned previously. Well, that's it. Hopefully you enjoyed this segment. 7-3 for now from VE3MIC.
Cool.
So that's that.
Does look better. Wow.
And I didn't mention, because of the low cost, you can afford to be a little risky. And if you brick it and you can't bring it back, you know, you're not out hundreds of dollars. But if you're careful, you should be okay. And again, you do this at your own risk.
Yeah.
Like anything else, updating firmware on anything, even from the factory, is kind of like rolling the dice sometimes.
Chat room is asking where can they get one? I don't know where you got yours, Mike. I don't remember. I know you did a segment on it, but I know I see them on Walmart and Amazon on our side.
Yeah, you can get them. They're available from all kinds of online resellers, Temu, AliExpress, I don't know so much about Walmart. I think Walmart did show up, but Amazon for sure.
Cool. You know, I need another radio, like another orifice in my head. But
what are you saying, George?
I'm saying the price is right, Emil.
Okay.
But I'm trying to hold out. I'm trying to be strong here.
Okay.
But it seems mighty tempting.
It is. The thing I liked about it, and the reason why I pulled the trigger, is it's a fully self-contained software-defined radio. I mean, most SDRs, unless you're dealing with a tabletop radio, like a full-fledged commercial SDR radio, you're looking at something that requires a computer. Even an SDR dongle is going to set you back at least $20. So why not spend a few more bucks and get something that's totally self-contained, totally portable? It's even got the built-in rechargeable battery.
Yeah, you know, a lot of these newer handheld shortwave radios, I've got a Texum, I think it's a 330. I don't remember the number for sure right off, but and it's been out for a few years. And the thing's nice, you know, it's AM, FM, sideband, got all the shortwave, AM and FM broadcast bands. And it's an SDR. And I didn't...
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know that when I ordered it, but I got it and got to looking at it. I don't know if it's the same chip that one uses, but, you know, it gives you the signal strength and a digital readout, everything. And for, you know, a speaker that big around, sounds decent. Nah, you know, it's not as good as my Radio Shack DX398 or whatever it is, Sanjian, but for what I paid for it, you know, which was more than you, about three times what you paid for that, but, you know, good radio, pretty amazing what you can get these days.
Yeah, especially SDR. I mean, you look at that board and there's only a handful of components on it.
Yeah.
The reverse side of that board has no components at all on it. So, you know, you count the components on that board that you see in the segment. That's the whole entire radio.
Yeah, and that's got an 18 mega, 328 in it?
Yes.
So that's, you know, that's like an Arduino class of chip.
Yeah, they went from the Arduino Nano. I think the 328 is actually the Uno equivalent. So it's a little more modern than the original was with the ATS-20. Now, mind you, my eyes aren't as good as they used to, and soldering that to that pin 25 on that flat pack 328P was, it's a good thing it was one of the corner pins. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Cool.
George, did you get that? If I remember right, did you get the network version of SDR Plays radio? Was that you?
No, I did not buy that. But
okay,
you know, I'm running a SDR Play RSP DX up in the country, and you helped me set up that VPN on, so I could get it over Starlink. SDR Connect software, man, it works like a champ. So I'm running software on my computer here at home, but it's sending the IQ data back and forth over the ethers.
Speaking of Starlink, that's a good segue into that news item I had.
Yes, you did have a news item on that topic.
This only came out yesterday. They're going to lower all the Starlink satellites by about 70 kilometers in order to provide better signal.
I was happy reading about it. I think saw a report from them like in the past 12 months. There had already been some speed increases on Starlink. This sounds like even more coming. So the more the merrier on that.
Yeah, I don't know how they did their calculations for the orbit initially, but it probably wasn't with the number of satellites that they currently have in orbit. So effectively, you know, the lower you go, you're reducing your footprint, right?
Yeah.
So with that many satellites up in the air, they can afford to lower them, I guess. That's my rationale anyway.
Yeah, and more bandwidth on each one because there's less people connected to it.
Right.
Decreased latency.
Yep, which is good.
Yep.
That's a good thing. It's pretty amazing already. I mean, because I've got Viasat at some transmitter sites, and while it works, it's good, but it's no comparison to a Starlink.
I have a question about you folks that are familiar with Starlink. With the amount of birds up in the air, and when I say birds, I mean aircraft traffic, when they're flying overhead, do they wipe out your signal temporarily as they're flying across the sky?
I think if it did cause it to fade, it would switch to another bird.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because it's always... you know, finding, I guess, the best route. And if an airplane blocked one, well, probably pick up another.
I know in my, when I was watching satellite KU band anyway, being a higher frequency and narrower beam width, I had trouble with obviously rain, heavy rain would wipe it out. and also the odd aircraft that would fly overhead would temporarily wipe out the signal.
Yeah, well, I mean, you were just shooting at one bird, so you didn't have the option of switching to a different path. But, yeah, the Starlinks will suffer from a rain fade. I can't say how often it does that because I'm not at that location all the time. It's been up every time I've tried to use it, but I do know that they will have some fades there. I noticed Francis said that he would buy one of those ATS 20 pluses, Mike, and he'd build it and play with it for a few days and then throw it in a corner like lots of other projects. My theory is, as long as you've got more room in the corner to throw it, go ahead, you know.
it's money and time well wasted, I'll say that much.
Emil, can we get an evaluation on that? Does it really matter anymore?
No, it doesn't really matter. No, like he said, I lost my street cheap cred.
Anything else we need to talk about before we get out of here tonight? I'm looking forward to, and hoping there is not a zombie outbreak this weekend here.
I did have a call from Cousin Jerry on Hams Over IP, I should say.
Oh, yeah?
Today. Yeah, and he was talking to me about Dayton. So he's still trying to swing going down to Dayton, even if it's just for the day. I currently have no plans to go down there. But, he's playing radio and doing fine. So, anyways, nice to hear from Cousin Jerry, V3EXT.
So you have your Hams Over IP working again?
I do.
Good.
In fact, I've got the, what do they call it? The busy lamp field indicator that shows me whether or not, the person at the other end, their extension is operating or not. It's either green, orange, or red.
Wow.
And, I can see Tommy's yellow now. So I don't know whether he's kind of taken his off hook during his vacationing.
It hadn't been normally, on anyway for a while, has it?
Well, it was showing green for me when I set him up. Yep.
Okay.
And you, of course, is green because I contacted you. Emil, of course, he's got a private line of some kind. I don't know what his extension is. Emil?
What? On what service?
You're not on Hams Over IP or any of those VoIP services?
That so IP here, phone is still you, in a box you, in a closet.
Here you are with your 10 gig fiber, and you don't even have a lousy VoIP phone.
It's in a closet somewhere, still in a box. I know. I still have it. I'm not hooked or anything. And then you stay off those services for so long, they just kick you off anyway.
Yeah, and I noticed your fiber, is that a single fiber in that cable?
No. No, it's two it's multi-mode, two strand.
Okay.
That's it. It's very small and it's armored, as they put it. They actually have a sign with a squirrel with a cross.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Squirrel.
The bitter tasting gel in there underneath the outer coating so that when a rat or something chews into it, it gets a bad taste in its mouth. The reason why I was asking, my fiber is kind of, it's more on the flat side. Mine's a two strand multimode as well.
Flat. It's like a flat cable.
Yeah. It's kind of flat.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a crushed, like an oval, I guess you could say, like a flat tire. Rather than round.
Yep. Putting 600 feet of that into wire loom was not fun. But I'm going to trench and bury it.
That's a lot of wire loom.
It is.
Now, have you decided how you're going to trench it?
I'm renting a trencher from like the Home Depot down this way. And putting about 6 inches down.
Okay, like a ditch witch?
Yeah. Just cuts a thin.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like a chainsaw looking like thing.
Yep. It is.
With a long handle. Yeah, and wheels. Well, that's good. Oh,
yeah. Yep, it's good to see a project come together.
It is. And it's good to know that the radio still works after being bounced around and moved and left in a box and abused.
Yeah. Well, we'll see about the amplifier next, I guess, huh?
Yeah, yep. You need to get some wire in the air so you can run that amp.
Yeah.
It's coming, Mike. Why? That's why I've been talking about Brian and about that, because that sky loop's going to happen for me. And I was thinking about a beverage because I have some pretty decent stretches of things, places to put that. So I always wanted to build one.
Yeah. Yeah, I may get around to that too. I don't know yet. I've got to look and see. One direction I can't go because there's a field over there. But everywhere else I could run it out there.
You know, George, we gotta hook up back with who was it? When we were hanging around Bob Heil, we went to a few forums with Sherwood.
Bob Sherwood.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bob Sherwood had some really awesome talks about low top band and, you know, really low stuff on those new bands.
Well, I see him.
Contest University.
Yeah, he's at Contest University every year. I speak with him for a few minutes. Now, I don't know that we can live up to his antenna aspirations. He's kind of like Brian there. He's pretty serious about the antenna situation, but a sky loop, man, you can do it. I know you can do it. I want a 160-meter one myself. Not on this property. There's not enough room, but that's the way I'm leaning. I might do something else. Four square sounds pretty interesting, but I don't know. That's an awful lot.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's going to do it. Fun show tonight. Appreciate everyone who joined us in the chat room, everyone who watched live, and everyone who's going to watch the recording. Tommy will be back with us next episode. We haven't really discussed what date that will be yet, but it'll be around the middle of April, maybe April the 17th. We'll have to see if that works for everybody. But I will be joining the ranks of Tommy and the unemployed. Well, yeah.
You say it like that, you make it sound like it's wasn't your idea.
Well, no, it was my idea. But I've got my replacement. We've been working together now since the 1st of March. Of course, we had worked together back in the 80s, so he knows how to pick up and run with this. I'm just showing him where the bones are buried. And end of the month, I've already given him the keys.
Will you be handing over your snake-killing hoe?
Yeah, well, it stays at the transmitter building. He asked me why I had hoes at these transmitter buildings. And I said, you never know. No email. You know what I'm talking about.
I do. Did I see you were training your replacement on Facebook or somewhere? I remember reading something.
That's Jason. Jason and I worked together back in the mid 80s when I moved to Jackson to be chief engineer at a group of stations here. Jason was my first assistant. And we worked together a couple of years, and then he moved to another, I think he moved to public radio then. And after I left what's now iHeart, got out of there after about 12 years, I recommended him as a replacement. So he came in and took over the reins from there and ran that for a lot of years, engineering-wise, and then he went back to the state, and now I'm leaving the job I'm at now, and it just worked out. You know, it's kind of, we got the mojo going there, you know, so it's his turn, and we've enjoyed working together the last couple of weeks. Got a couple more to go. yesterday, and this is an important bullet point here, Emil, for me. We did the ceremonial changing of the telephone numbers in the remote controls.
Okay.
So now when a site fails, it dials his phone instead of mine.
Great. I don't know, Mike, what do you think? You think George is going to like not answer the call of the swamp? I don't know if he can resist that.
Well, unfortunately, the one in the swamp requires you go on site with a computer to reprogram it. And last time I tried to connect to it, the serial port wasn't working. So I got to do something about that one. All the rest of them are calling him, but Swamp's still calling me.
I don't know, Emil. You know, that phone started ringing during the segment, so.
That's right. That's right. I'm thinking
all of
that's
going
to be hard for George to resist. If I know George right.
The call of the swamp. Well, you know, I was raised near a swamp, Emil. Sort of like you, I guess, in a way.
That's right.
Yeah.
Maybe my next segment, now that I've got all my bits together, might be on an HF mobile installation.
Yeah. Yeah. You're about due for a good mobile HF installation, huh?
I am, if the weather would cooperate.
Yeah. Well, you've got the battery for it, don't you?
I'm sorry?
You've got the battery for it, don't you?
How's that?
I thought you had a hybrid vehicle.
Oh, I do, yes.
Yeah.
But the hybrid battery is 400 volts.
Oh.
Although I've got inverter or converter outlets that bring me to 110, but I won't need that. It's got a 12 volt system in it as well. So
okay,
no problem. And it's kind of handy because on the hybrid, the 12 volt battery is under the passenger rear seat. You just pop the seat up and pop a plastic cover off, and you're looking right at the 12 volt battery. It really couldn't be any easier.
Thanks for being here, everyone. Again, join us in the middle of April for the next Amateur Logic. In the meantime, I know Mike is probably still doing antenna work because of the weather, but down here we like to do it when it's warmed up a little bit, not when it's 100 degrees outside, but right now is good antenna weather down here. The trees are just starting to get some leaves on them, so you want to go ahead and get right on it.
Yeah, you want to get that wire up before the foliage starts to appear.
Yep.
No doubt.
7-3.
7-3.
7-3.